Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 106 in chapter 23 of the book of Luke. And at this point, Pilate, in verse 14, is in essence telling the priesthood, telling, you know, the chief priests and the rulers of the people, that he finds absolutely nothing wrong with Jesus Christ. He examined him, you know, in your presence, he says to them, "And I found no fault in this man concerning those things which you accuse him." In other words, you are liars. You see, and obviously he has a lot of contempt for them. Rome never had much respect for the leadership of Judah at the time, and for good reasons. There was an awful lot of corruption in them, unfortunately. And not all of them, but many of them, you know, they were vying for political power and killing one another and cheating one another. You can read that in Josephus, where he condemns his own nation, his own people, and all the chicanery that was there. You know, the usual that you find oftentimes in government, and when they are more corrupt, you find much more of that. So, and all those things are there. He knows what they've done, that they've done it for political reasons, nothing to do with religious questions or issues, and the mere fact that they're trying to force him, in essence, to do the dirty work for them already, you know, tells him an awful lot about them. You see, if it was a religious question, you know, they would have taken care of it. After all, when they wanted to, you know, stone Stephen, they did it. You see, and this is not what they were doing here. So obviously, it was irregular what they were doing here. But since they couldn't get him, you know, themselves, the reason why they could not, because all the people would have come after them. You see, they feared the people. So, in secret, in essence, they are doing all these things. The people are not aware of all these behind-the-scenes events here, you see. The whole nation is not aware of it. The people are not aware of it. Had they been aware of it, they would have stormed, you know, the palace of the high priest and the temple itself. And they would have stormed also the palace of Pilate to free Jesus Christ. Because all of them followed him, but the, you know, these leaders had a different agenda there. And so they're doing it all in secret. And whatever they try is not working, you see. So they could not condemn him and then face the people after that, because nobody was going to believe them that there was anything wrong with what he said, with what he did, you see. That's the reason why they're trying to get Pilate into the act, to do the dirty work for them, so they can blame Pilate for doing it and not themselves. And then find, you know, with Pilate, you know, they have to come up with a good reason, finally they do, from their own point of view, which forced, Pilate to act, which means, you know, they say, look, you know, this man is actually a traitor against Caesar, and now, if you do not do anything about it, we're going to tell on you to Caesar, you know. So what does Caesar know? He doesn't know. So Pilate, again, you know, himself get trapped in this politics, dirty politics, and he acts based on that. Otherwise, he shows throughout this whole affair that he's not interested. He was not necessarily a very righteous man. He's not a righteous man at all. But on the other hand, he's not interested in committing an act of lawlessness against his own empire, you see, by condemning an innocent man, and especially when he could not find anything wrong with him. He, you know, had no personal reason to do any of that, but at the same time he was guilty, because in spite of the fact that he condemns them and condemns himself, at the same time, by saying that he found nothing wrong in him, you see, that already should have taken care of the matter. But then the other matter came, you know, the treason against Caesar. Verse 15, he says that even Herod, he said, no, neither did Herod. In other words, he didn't find anything wrong with him. But again, you know, even Herod himself found nothing wrong with him, and yet, you know, he allowed his soldiers to mock him and have contempt for him, and he had no reason to do that either. So he says, "For I sent you back to him, and indeed nothing deserving of death." This is what they were after. "Nothing deserving of death has been done by him." In other words, nothing was done by Jesus Christ to merit the death penalty, not by the religious community, but by Rome. You see? So he had done nothing wrong against the government. That's the issue here. You see? Verse 16. He said, I will therefore chastise him and release him. Now that doesn't make sense. It's just like the judge, you know, saying to a defendant, I find you totally innocent of these charges, you know, that, you know, the those people bring against you, a prosecutor brings against you, but, you know, I'm going to, you know, have you chastised or put in prison anyway for a while, just, you know, make them happy. You see, that's total nonsense. Why would he do a thing like that? No lawful, you see, and at least, you know, righteous in the sight of Rome, a governor or a ruler would ever do a thing like that. It's totally uncalled for and against the law of Rome to do a thing like that. But then again, you know, everybody's acting very irrational here because unclean spirits are at work here because the will of God had to be done. So all of them, in essence, are led in a certain direction beyond their control in essence, and on the other hand, you know, with their participation. And so this is what he says here, which is, again, unlawful. Verse 17, for it was necessary for him to release one to them at the feast. And so he thought, well, you know, I'll just chastise him, you know, I'll please you, and then, you know, I'll send him free. And then that would take care of that matter of sending someone free during the feast. You know, that was a custom of Rome. And they all cried out at once, saying, away with this man, and release to us Barabbas. You know, Barabbas, the son of the father, or the son of father. You see, this one is the true son of the father. Well, this one is the son of a human father. Who had been thrown into prison for a certain rebellion made in the city and for murder. Now, this guy was responsible for crimes against Rome. Therefore, he was guilty. You see, and he deserved to be put to death. And he also murdered in the process of that rebellion, you see. But Jesus Christ, he had done nothing. He just taught. You see, there was absolutely nothing there. And nobody would find him guilty in Israel except, you know, the priesthood that wanted him dead. For whatever reason, doesn't make any difference. And Pilate, you know, perceived what was really happening there, and he was not about to be a part of it. So, you know, he's trying to push it away, but on the other hand, he's trying to please them because, you know, politics is there. He doesn't want to get in trouble with Rome either. Pilate, therefore, wishing to release Jesus, again, called out to them. So that was in his intent. Now, why? Because he knows that he's innocent. But on the other hand, you know, he's willing to play games with them, which is contrary to the law, which means that he himself is, you know, just a politician. That means a corrupt one, not a righteous one. But they shouted, saying, crucify him, crucify him. Again, Jews cannot crucify because that was not a part of the Jewish law. That's forbidden. He can kill by stoning, he can kill by burning, you know, he can kill by hanging, but he cannot crucify. And so they want it to be a crime against Rome. And yet, Rome finds nothing with Jesus Christ that makes him guilty and worthy of crucifixion or death. And he knew exactly this is what they were after. You know, they were not after Pilate just condemning him to death by stoning because, you know, Rome didn't do things like that, or burning or hanging. But crucifixion, that's the way they dealt with the murderers. And this is what they want, crucifying, crucifying, they say. Verse 22, then he said to them the third time, three times, you know, just like you find many times in the Bible, three times. Completion. Why? What evil has he done? So he's trying to resist it. I found no reason for death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go. So he's still, first on one hand, he's acting righteous, and on the other hand, he's acting as a politician, as a corrupt politician. If you find nothing wrong with him, why chastise him? You see how he's at the same time trying to wash his hands, proclaim his innocence, but on the other hand, he's making himself guilty. Well, that's unfortunately the way politicians are, and men who are corrupt, and yet, you know, they try to appear to everybody that they are good people. Verse 23, but they were insistent, demanding with loud voices that he be crucified, and the voices of this man and of the chief priests prevailed. Why? The law of Rome, you see, should have prevailed. After all, from the power point of view, who is the boss? Not the chief priest. but wrong, you see. And yet the chief priest prevailed. What spirit was there? You see, there are a lot of unclean spirits in that meeting, as well as in many others. That even Pilate himself, Rome itself, was subdued by those unclean spirits that were in the high priests. That is, in the chief priests. High priest wasn't there. The chief priests and all the people that were there. And they themselves did not realize what manner of spirit was in them. Just like Jesus Christ, when he rebuked John and James, when they wanted to bring down fire from heaven and destroy the Samaritans, he says, "You do not know what manner of spirit you are." You see, they were not aware of the fact that they were being inspired by demons to desire that fate for innocent people. They didn't deserve death, you see. And so you find here the chief priests also falling prey, again, because of their own attitude and feelings and things like that. And so it was also because of the attitude and feelings and on the part of John and James that they gave themselves to that spirit to desire vengeance and destruction, you see. All of us are suspect to it, be it criminals, you know, be it men of God. If we're not careful, a lot of us, you know, are not careful. And that's the reason why I found a lot of people, you know, just hating one another and slandering one another and accusing one another and putting down one another and having frictions and conflicts. And many times in time past, people went to war, literally. Religious people all went to church, all claimed to be Christians, you see. Or you find it in the Jewish community, all claimed to be the servants of the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and they fight one another and they hate and slander one another. And in time past, they even kill one another, you see. Well, when we allow ourselves and open our minds to unclean spirits instead of resisting the devil, this is what happens. And this is what happened to these people. And here, in specific, this was the will of God, that it would happen this way. So he's active in all that, and you always have to see. You see, just like you're sitting in a movie theater, you got to see the entirety of the scene there. And like, you know, with a puppet's show, you have to see the guy also who's pulling all the strings. And if you get to you concentrate too much on just on the puppets, you think, you know, they're doing it on their own. Well, the kids think that way. You know, they're not smart at that point, so to speak. You know, the thing, the puppets are really, you know, they seem to be so real to them. And yet, there is a guy there pulling the strings. And so the one who is pulling the strings here is not necessarily even the devil or the demons, but God himself. You see, it has to be done. It has to happen that way. And so Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they requested. You see, which shows you the total corruption in the man and how he gave in to unclean spirits and to the rule of lawlessness, because that was contrary to Rome. With all the ruthlessness that you found in Rome in those days, you see, they still had a very high regard and respect for their law. And people that were found, or even governors that transgressed their own law, you see, they executed, they did whatever they did with them. They did not tolerate that, because that's something they understood. If you have no rule of law within the empire, you'll have constant anarchy, and so they did not tolerate that. And here it is, a governor gives in to the mob and does that which is contrary against his own conscience, and that made him double guilty for doing it. You see, it's not that in ignorance he had done it. He knew full well, and he did it anyway to save his own skin. And so he released to them the one they requested, who for rebellion and murder had been thrown into prison, but he delivered Jesus to their will. Delivers an innocent person for a guilty person. Again, you see so much iniquity there on all parts, in every way. On the part of the priests, you see, the chief priest. Of course, later on, you know, people did not use that terminology. They used, you know, on the part of the Jews. What do you mean on the part of the Jews? What about all the people of Israel that were at the time that followed Jesus Christ? You cannot say on the part of the Jews unless you specify what you mean by that. You see, but you know, if you specify what you mean by that, make it very plain, and know it in your heart, and not spread hatred against a race and a people, entire people, as if all of them are guilty, you know, that's a different story. And people, oftentimes, in their own wickedness, though they know exactly what is happening here, all these people that have been accusing, you know, the entirety of the Jewish nation, know very well what is happening here. They're reading the account that it was not the multitudes, it was not the people, you see, it was not the entirety of the nation, it was a small group of people that wanted the destruction of Jesus because that was a political issue for them. They wanted to retain power. You see, and instead of seeing it for what it is, and you get criminals in every given nation on the face of the earth, you see, but do not accuse the entirety of the nation for it. Even though there were some people there, and still it's some people, the whole Jewish nation was not there saying, you know, his blood be upon us and our children. So if some people say that, you accuse the whole nation for that? Especially when you have the overwhelming majority of the Jewish nation to begin with was not even living in the land, but in other countries, you see. But, you know, that's unfortunately the way it is. But, you know, still, in spite of that, ultimately speaking, everybody is guilty. All Jews are guilty of that. All nations are guilty of that. All human beings are guilty of that because it is our sin, ultimately, that had him crucified. And yet at the same time, it is by the will of God so that he may offer us redemption. And you see, that's not human. Humanly, that doesn't make sense. You see, and that's the reason we should never look at it from a human point of view, but only from God's point of view. What is it really that is happening here? And a lot of people forget that this is not the word of man, this is the word of God. And if it is the word of God, study it from the point of view of God. He is the one inspiring all things, doing all things, as it says even about conversion. It's not us who are doing it, but it is of him who wills, you see, who gives us the will to do. You see, that we are granted repentance and we change. And so all things ultimately proceed from God. That's why he said, I create good and I create evil. To what end? Not like the devil, he creates evil to destroy, period. But God allows evil and creates evil and brings evil in order to build and to redeem and to heal and to cleanse and to purge. You see, just like the doctor that gives you the bitter medicine. Why? Because he wants you dead or killed? No, because he wants you to be healed, you see, to be cured of your whatever you know ailment you have. So you have to see that always from the point of view of God and not man. And so he delivered the innocent person instead of the guilty person. And that was supposed to be that way. The lamb that was being offered as a sacrifice, you see, in accordance with the law of sacrifices, was to be a male without spot, without blemish, innocent, and he's going to be delivered for what? For the sins of the person that brings it to the altar, who is the guilty one, and then he transfers his sins and iniquities on the lamb. And when you think about it, that doesn't make sense. What did the lamb do? Nothing. So what kind of reasoning is that? A divine reasoning. That's why, you know, when people do not have the knowledge and understanding of God and the nature and the mind of God, they resent God. They hate God. They are enemies of God. They don't understand his reasoning. And as he said, look, my ways are not your ways. You see, my thoughts are not your thoughts. So if we read whatever we read here and begin to think from a human point of view, we will never understand it. And therefore, we're going to have a lot of problems with God and his nature and mind and character. And that's why a lot of people hate his law. They resent it. It doesn't make sense to them. It's contrary to their human thinking. And that's what the problem is. God is not going to be human and think like us. We are going to have to learn to think like him because he's the giver of life, not us. He created us. We didn't create him. He's the boss. He makes the rules. We don't. So we have a choice, either follow his rules, his reasoning, his divine nature, his actions and things like that, or else we have a choice. The other choice, becoming ashes as if we never existed before. It's a very simple choice. He's not going to compromise his law or his way of thinking or his reasoning or his divine nature in order to appease us, as Pilate here was trying to appease guilty people when he knew that they were. And so we read in verse 26, now as they led him away, they laid hold, that is the Roman soldiers now are taking over, they laid hold of a certain man, Simon a Cyrenian, who was coming from the country. And on him they laid the cross that he might bear it after Jesus. And of course at this point you don't see the entirety of the picture, because the day before that, you see, shortly after that, whenever it happened, one day, you know, he was crucified. You see, the feeling is that he was scourged, and immediately after that he was taken to the crucifixion site. Well, actually, there are other details. When you put it all together, you realize now that he was brought before Caesar, he was chastised, and the next day in the morning, early in the morning, that's when they took him to be crucified. So it didn't happen at the same time. So he was, in essence, as Paul, the pilot said, chastised, but, you know, he was scourged. It's a sort of an understatement. He was scourged, and it was a very horrible scourging. Oftentimes they did those kind of things to make it less difficult, in one sense, on the prisoner on the cross. In other words, try to bring him to the point where he's not going to last a long time, you know, and die before, for long, you see. So, it was both ways. Not that they were merciful people, but in scourging a person, he would have less chances of surviving longer on the cross, you see, instead of being there for a long time. Because when they did not scourge them, obviously they lasted much longer on the cross, and then in that, they suffered even more so. Whichever is the case, the scourging of Jesus Christ did not precede immediately the crucifixion, because the crucifixion was in the morning, and different accounts, especially in John, tell us that the time when he was scourged was midday or something like that, past midday. And obviously that could not be, because he was crucified early in the morning. By 9 o'clock he was already on the cross. And so we read here, obviously, you know, Luke does not necessarily give us all the details, the entirety of the scenario here. And that's the reason why I have to read the different writings of the different writers here, that are called the Gospels, to put the entirety of the picture together. And so they led him away at this point, that's early in the morning, got him out of prison. He was there, pining away, you know, suffering all night, suffering, you know, from the scourging, bleeding. And no help, no medication, nothing. You see, that was a part of the sacrifice. Verse 26, so we read here, now as they led him away, they laid hold on a certain man, that is of a certain man, Simon a Cyrenian. It's interesting, as we mentioned earlier, his friend, his disciple Simon, that should have been with him all along, fled, and here it is another Simon that takes his place in that sense, you know, symbolically. And he's helping him carry the cross. You see, Peter was the one that said, you know, Simon was the one that said, I'll be with you, I'm willing to die with you. Well, here it is, you know. This Simon is the one helping Jesus Christ carry the cross, now that he wanted to, you know, he was forced to do it. But, twist of irony there. And he was coming from the country, and on him they laid the cross that he might bear it after Jesus. Because, you see, after all the scourging, and he's suffering, and he's in pain, and he's bleeding all over the place. He cannot do anything. He cannot hold it himself. And so they make somebody else do it, since they chastised him, you know, scourged him the night before, the day before. And by morning time, you know, Jesus just could not bear it anymore, and they realized that, so they made Simon do it. And so he took the cross that he might bear it after Jesus. So he took his cross and followed Jesus, literally. And it's very interesting, because Jesus Christ told his disciples, those who are to follow him, that they must take their cross and follow him. And yet all of them fled away. And in contrast, a man that was not even thinking about it, he was not a disciple of Christ. We don't know anything about him beyond this point. We don't know what happened to him later on. He's the one that ends up doing it. Well, again, another twist of irony there. And a great multitude of the people followed him, and women who also mourned and lamented him. You see, the multitudes again, and the women that were there, they were not party to this mockery that was happening here. You see? So they followed him, and they followed him in essence to the end. And again, another twist of irony. His disciples are not mentioned here. They should have been there. you see. But they didn't follow him there. And then later on we find John standing there by the cross and Mary and other Mary. But generally speaking, the disciples, you know, most of them fled away. And whether it showed up at this point or from a distance, we don't know. There's no record about it. But here it is, a multitude that constantly followed him, a great multitude. Now, this were not the mob. These are people that did not necessarily go along with it, and some of them did. You see, it was sort of mixed multitude here. And they were going to be agitated later on, not all of them, but, you know, the many that were not necessarily followers of Christ to begin with. And the unclean spirits were there en masse, you see, to whip up emotions there, poison minds and hearts. And so there is a mixture there of good and evil. Verse 28, but Jesus, turning to them, said, daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. To the end, his concern for his people, for his bride, for his wife, for his nation, you see, not for himself. That's what he's saying to them. It's not for me that you should weep. Because God is a God of justice and a God of vengeance and is a God of mercy and is a God of grace, you see, and is God of justice. Everything must be served in the manner that only God can serve it, you see. And so he's saying, you know, there are going to be consequences to this charade, to this mockery, to this, iniquity that is being committed here. And in essence, even innocent people had to pay the penalty for it, even though they were not involved in it. And so he said, for indeed the days are coming in which they will say, blessed are the barren wombs that never bore, and breasts which never nursed. Why? Because of all the calamities that is going to come. It's going to be a curse to be alive and to be born. Then they will begin to say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. And then when you go to Revelation, you see at the end of time, you see, at the end of time, you see literally people, and you hear literally people, and then you read about literally people who are going to make these kind of statements. So it's not only telling them about what is coming in terms of that very moment, you see, or that very time, which 40 years later on, the temple was destroyed. But, you know, a lot of people felt like that, you know, the end of the world was coming. And Jerusalem was taken into captivity, and many of the Jews, and many were killed. Others, you know, were left behind. But even at this point, he's, in essence, revealing a fact about the end time, that is the future, 2,000 years down the road. And, of course, those people who read it and later on read this statement, they thought, aha, well, here it is. He's speaking about the end time, and he's coming back in our day. So a lot of things go into this statement. And different people understood it in different ways. So he says, for if they do these things in the green wood, what will be done in the dry? You see, if in good times, you know, these kind of things happen, what's going to happen when everything is in chaos and confusion and turmoil, when all hell breaks loose, so to speak? There were also two others, criminals. Both of them were criminals. He was not. They were. They were led with him to be put to death. They deserved it in accordance with the law. They sinned against Rome, you see. That's why Rome is the one taking charge of that and not the community of Israel. But Rome knew very well that this man was not involved, that is, Rome and the person of Pilate. And the centurions and the soldiers, many others, you see, they all knew that. And when they had come to the place called Calvary, you know, later on called Calvary, there was no such a place at that time. Somebody somewhere down the road gave it that name. And, you know, it still is to this very day. There is a whole church called by that name. And there they crucified him and the criminals, one on the right hand and the other on the left. Again, they are criminals, you see. Another mention, they are criminals. He was not, they were. And then Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do. Now again, in the past many centuries, whenever, you know, they call it the Passion, you know, they play that whole show, whatever they want to call it. They call it the Passion, you know, in some places, other things, whatever it may be, you know, the final events that led to the cross. They go through that whole entire scenario every year, and they've done it for centuries. And all that was to the end that they may weep a lot of emotions. The clergy were behind it. A lot of people were behind it in order to weep up emotions among the mob that came to the church in any given country, and still they do it to this very day. There is a big one happening in Germany every year. And the end result of that, all the people that are there at the end of it are filled with abundance, or they're filled with total hatred, malice, you see, and animosities, and fury and wrath against the Jew, you see, which is always depicted in those shows as a criminal, didn't look like a normal human being, you see, made a mockery out of the Jew, and they forgot what the Jew, Jesus Christ, said at the end of it. He was not calling on the wrath of God. He was not calling on the fire to come down from heaven and consume his own wife, his own people, that is, representatives of her that were there, who were seeking his blood. You see, he was not asking for any of that. He was not at the end of this scenario, filled with hatred and darkness and bigotry and animosity and wrath and fury against his own people. In contrast, all those so-called Christians, which weren't anything but that, in their spirit and attitude, as Christ said to John and James, you do not know of what manner of spirit you are. And this is what they were, of another spirit. And the clergy were too stupid and idiots, you know, and then you can, you know, come up with all kind of names, and blind and dumb, and as Christ would say, poor and naked and wretched and miserable. And they did not see what they were doing to the people, poisoning minds and hearts, instead of pointing to this statement here, the final statement at this point before he was crucified. And he said that later on, before he died. He said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do. Why is it that people did not have this attitude all these 2,000 years and still to this very day? Every Passover time, they call it Easter, you know, pagan holiday. A pagan religion had taken on, you know, the name of Christ and some of his teachings and appropriate whatever they wanted to appropriate. And then they point their hatred and their malice and their viciousness and their darkness against the Jew, without whom there would be no salvation. For all those who claim to be followers of Christ, as Christ said, salvation is of the Jews, whether you like it or not, in good or in bad. You see, salvation is of the Jews, and you have no other way to God but through the Jew. The Jew that followed Christ, in terms of the disciples and all the people that he had later on that followed him, and the Jews that crucified him, they were all, you see, responsible and made it possible for all humanity to have salvation. That's the way God worked it out. You know, had it not been the Jews, if God didn't choose, you know, Israel, it would have chosen another nation, you know, then another nation would have been doing exactly the same. You see, always try to understand it from God's point of view. And when you take your eyes off God and you begin to lean to the words of man, to the understanding of man, and as God said, cursed be the man who puts his trust in man, and if you look to man for explanations, to whip up your emotion and fill you with hatred and malice and darkness, you see, where are you going to end up? And so this is very important to remember that. That's the bottom line. God was the one doing all these things, and therefore it was up to God to forgive it all. He allowed the devil in, he allowed unclean spirits in. You see, he could have opened their minds like he did, you know, with the other disciples and the other multitudes, and they would have followed him instead of crucifying him. But then, how would he be able to offer salvation to humanity unless not only some followed him, but some crucified him and hated him without cause? And they generally were the minority, you see. But all that was a part of the plot that God was the chief conspirator behind, to bring about salvation to humanity through this. And that's not human. That's not human reasoning. That's not human thinking. And of course it's not. It's divine. And you have to accept it, the entirety of it. Not, you know, pick and choose whatever you want. The good parts of it, that God so loved the world. Yes, by loving the world, he created also all the evil around it to make it possible to come to pass. And he used human beings And as Peter later on said, when he preached to his own people in the temple, he said, I realize that neither you nor your leaders knew what you were doing. You were ignorant. He understood exactly what was happening, you see. And how many people have understood it since that time who call themselves Christians to this very day? That's why you have anti-Semitism, because people are of another spirit. And that's not acceptable with God. And so this is what he says here. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And they divided his garments and cast lots. You know, the Romans had done it, and some in their foolishness and ignorance, they claim, well, this statement was not for the Jews, this statement was for the Roman soldiers, which is utter foolishness. That shows, you know, the poison and the pollution that is in the mind and the heart of man. You see, they too don't look at things from the point of view of God, but from the point of view of man, and the poison of anti-Semitism is still very profound there that causes people to even think that way. Now, when he says, Father, forgive them, he's speaking about his wife, his bride. She doesn't know what he's doing. She's insane. That is a part of them that were. But they were all necessary for the salvation to come to all, not only Israel, who were all over the place, and all those who lived before that, and all those who were going to be born after that, but for all mankind. And so God, who was behind it, responsible for it, ultimately speaking, also needed to forgive them, because that was the reason why he sent him to begin with, to pay the penalty for them. And so the people looking, stood looking on, verse 35, but even the rulers with them sneered. Well, the people were looking on, but the people were sneering. You know, the rulers, you see the minority there, still the minority, saying, he saved others, which is a condemnation against themselves. They knew that he did, showing the insanity that was in them. Let him save himself, if he is the Christ, the chosen of God. Well, that was proved beyond the shadow of a doubt, and the multitudes followed him because of that. And yet the leaders were not willing to accept it. That is a part of the leadership that was not. It's not even all of them at this point. But then again, they were playing a role there that God wanted them to play that role. If they didn't do it, somebody else would have had to do it. If there was no Judas, somebody else would have been, you know, whatever other name. Somebody had to do it. And they're a part of the game, you see. There is no other way. You know, when you need to, you know, administer medicine to heal or cure a person, you've got to pick up on a certain medicine. Somebody or something has to do it. There's no way around it. That's the way it works. You know, you pick up the hammer and you're banging on the head of the nail. Somebody has to do it in order to come up with the end result, which is good. And only God can do things like that, even in the midst of evil, to bring good out of it. So let's understand it always from only from God's point of view. Put on the eyeglasses of God himself. And through his word, which is spirit, and through his Holy Spirit, look at it, not humanly, not with the nature and the mind of the devil or his demons, which unfortunately most people followed, and from that point of view looked at it. And how many of us are guilty of that to this very moment? And so they were mocking him, again, being, you know, blind and ignorant and insane, spiritually speaking. Verse 36, the soldiers also mocked him. What reason did they have to do it when Pilate told them very plainly that he's not guilty? Well, because an unclean spirit was in all of them, and the whole world was guilty of that sacrifice. And they needed to be guilty, and they needed to be partakers of the sacrifice in order to have salvation. That's God's way, and it's not man's. You see, we must either accept it or reject God altogether, and then we'll be totally rejected too. And so the soldiers also mocked him, coming and offering him sour wine. And, you know, the reason for the sour wine is to give him strength to go on, you know, to take the pain, suffer more. And saying, if you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. Now they, you know, were not followers of Christ, you know, they knew nothing about it. The Romans, so, you know, you can understand their mockery, but still, they should have known that he was not guilty. He had done nothing wrong against Rome. He had, you know, had no reason to feel that way. And verse 38, we read, an inscription also was written over him in letters of Greek, Latin, and Hebrew. This is the king of the Jews. You put the entirety of the account, you know, by the four writers, and you would read, this is Jesus, this is Jesus of Nazareth, the king of the Jews. Why is it that Luke has only partial statement and somebody else another partial statement, you see? Well, that's the way God inspires us. He does not give truth to everybody, you see. He gives, that is, does not give the entirety of the truth to one person or two. He gives some here and some here and some here. And then when we come and edify one another and sharpen one another, instead of clobbering one another and putting down one another, I know this, you don't know that, and exalting ourselves, then we get a complete picture. That's the reason why God works that way. And a lot of people still don't get it. Not everybody is the eye, not everybody is the head, not everybody is the leg or the foot or whatever it may be. God gives some to everybody. Therefore, we should learn to honor everybody for their contribution and not shut their mouth, you see, not prevent them from speaking, not put them down. That's what God is looking for. That's why he oftentimes does not reveal the entirety of the truth, because he wants to see how are we going to act. Are we going to be as brothers and sisters, you know, helping one another, or going to afflict and oppress one another, and unclobber one another with the truth, as the manner of many is. And so then we read here, then one of the criminals, again, criminals, mind you, the scripture makes it very plain. God makes it very plain. These were criminals, he was not, and yet he gave his life for them. You see? And how many of us are willing to do it? Then one of the criminals who were hanged blasphemed him, and saying, if you are the Christ, save yourselves and us. Well, before that, in a different account, we read that both of them were, in essence, accusing him, whatever it may be, in other words, in bitterness of spirit. And then, as time went by, one of them is just coming back to his senses and changing his mind and his attitude, and is sort of repenting in that way. One of them here continues to do so, and this is what Luke is recording here. Others recorded other bits and pieces of information, put it all together, and you understand not only what happened, but you understand also the mind of God, the manner in which he works, and the way the Holy Spirit inspires everybody to contribute a piece of the puzzle so nobody gets a big head. You see? And whenever you hear somebody that thinks that he knows it all, and God speaks only through me, you know that you are talking to an arrogant and a haughty person, a self-deluded person. You see, there have been a lot of people like that, unfortunately, in time past. Even the prophets of God didn't know it all. God did not reveal everything to all the prophets. And so this is what we read here at this point. One of the criminals who were hanged blasphemed him, saying, if you are the Christ, save yourself and us. Now, what kind of a statement is that to make? Foolish statement. You know, but again, you know, everybody's insane at this point. But the other, answering, rebuked him, saying, do you not even fear God? That was his problem. When we don't fear God, that's the way we behave. When we do not fear God, we accuse one another, we put down one another, and we exalt ourselves above others. You see, we forget what we are. As Jesus Christ told us, as he told the disciples. You see, you have a master, and you have only one master, and he is in heaven, but all of you are brethren. And we should behave in that manner, and we still need to learn to behave in that manner, and we have a long way to go, unfortunately, for some of us at least. And this man is accusing Jesus Christ wrongly, mocking him, and the other one is rebuking him. And he basically puts, he makes it very plain. The reason for it is because you do not fear God. When you fear God, you don't do things like that. And so, we read here in verse 41 what he tells him. He says, do you not even fear God, seeing you are under the same condemnation? You know, you're guilty. He's not. And we indeed justly, for we receive the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong. Well, why do you treat him like that? But, you know, when an unclean spirit enters into people, they become bitter and hateful, and they become unreasonable, and they just don't think about what they're saying. They just say it because, you know, they're hurting. That's all. Verse 42, then he said to Jesus, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. You see? And when was Jesus going to come into his kingdom? He's not saying, you know, when you are sent up to heaven because he's going to be resurrected. You see? But when he comes down with the kingdom and reigns on this earth, when he calls for everybody, you know, the last trump, the judgment day, everybody comes out of the grave to be judged. That's what he's talking about, the end time. A lot of people, you know, as time went by, they developed, you know, that pagan doctrine of heaven and hell, which they borrowed from the Gentiles, and then from that point of view, they began to look at this statement. And obviously, it's totally wrong, as we made it very plain before that. And Jesus said to him, assuredly I say to you today, you know, there is a comma after you, and you can put the comma wherever you want, you still end up with the same truth. Today you will be with me in paradise. When is that today? You know, 1,000 years for God is like a second, or a day, split second. You know, you're going to die now, and when you're resurrected, just like a split second went by, you would never know the passage of time, how much time went by, you see. So for you, it's going to be today. You see, if you die at 3 o'clock and you're resurrected, you'd never know how much time went by. So for you, it's still today. You see, if it was Tuesday, it'll still be Tuesday, 3 o'clock. That's when you died, that's when you're resurrected, as far as you're concerned. So you have to understand it from that point of view. Otherwise, you don't get the statement here. Again, you know, if you believe in that pagan doctrine of heaven and hell, you know, you're going to interpret it from your own point of view. And until next time, this is again Mordecai Joseph.